Stillman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Caroline Fenton is with us. Trade deadline day in the NHL. Preds general manager David Poile in 30 minutes. Not to discuss the move he made, but really to discuss the moves he didn't make. But the NFL draft is right around the corner, and I am beside myself. You know, it feels like we know who the first three picks are going to be. And then I keep asking myself, is Mac Jones, and I mean no disrespect to Mac Jones out of Alabama, is Mac Jones actually going to go with the third overall pick? Like, really? And then what about Justin Fields? And then what about Carolina? They just traded for Sam Darnold. So are they done, period, looking at quarterback? And then what about the Titans? And what about the fact that pass rusher might not go until 19th or 20th? I mean, it is a very weird draft. And with that, we bring on, we might as well just call him Mr. Draft, because I know in my heart I'm going to miss him this year. Trey Wingo joins us. Of course, he hosts now on YouTube. He's got his new podcast out and much, much more. Trey Wingo presents. So Trey Wingo joins us on the program. Trey, it's draft time, which means I'm sure everybody is hitting you up, so I want to appreciate you coming on our show today.
Oh, Jared, always good to be with you, man. What's going on?
So I want to ask you this question. You taking the cheese, Mac Jones, 3 overall to San Francisco, because I have a hard time seeing it.
Well, it's interesting, right? I was listening to the intro, and you said it's going to be those three picks, and then in my mind I was like, wow, he knows more than everybody. Like, it depends on who you talk to. Like, 1 and 2, I think, are dead solid locks at this point, Trevor Lawrence and Zach Wilson. I don't think there's much mystery there. But at 3, here's what I can say with certainty. You don't make that trade up, if you're San Francisco, for one of several quarterbacks. There's clearly someone that Kyle Shanahan and the general manager, John Lynch, want. A lot of people think it's Mac Jones. Some people may think it might be Justin Fields. Other people might think it may be Trey Lance. So I think the 49ers know, but I think there's a wide discrepancy about what other people think they know or pretending like they know at this point.
What would it do to the 49ers to be floating out the Mac Jones thing? And I think one of the reasons I ask you this is you sat up there for years with Shefty and Mel, and I got to believe that all these guys – that, you know, leading up to all the draft work that you guys did, they're probably sitting there saying, you know, half the things they're being told aren't true. And their
Let's go like 90%. I mean, seriously, I just call it lying season in the NFL. And there's no shame in it. You know, I have no issue with people doing it. But like what you just said is the whole crux of the matter, right? If the 49ers are putting out there the Mac Jones stuff, what does that tell you? Well, they're doing that for a reason. Either A, they're absolutely in love with Mac Jones and they think he's going to be the greatest thing ever, or B, maybe they think that someone will want to come up and make that trade with them. But that doesn't make a lot of sense because they've already made that pick, right? They've already made that move. So it's very hard to discern what is truth and what is fiction around the draft, which is why it's kind of hilarious to sort of sit back and just watch it all take place. And just sort of let the nonsense sort of wash over you.
If you were Atlanta at 4, Trey, let's say, because I think we all feel comfortable, quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. If you were Atlanta at 4, would you trade the pick? And I know there have been some rumors that they've been entertaining offers. Would you take the best non-quarterback available? Or would you look at Matt Ryan and say, hey, he's not getting any younger. I'm Arthur Smith. I'm a quarterback guy. Look what I did with Tannehill. Let me try to do it with Trey Lance, Justin Fields, or somebody like that.
Yeah, it makes all the sense in the world because, we know quarterbacks are going 1, 2, and 3. The question is whether or not quarterbacks are going to go at 4. Like that's the situation. And you know, it's funny, like the draft started at 2 earlier, like 3 weeks ago. It's going to be at 2 because everyone knew Trevor Lawrence was going number 1. Well, then Zach Wilson is definitely going number 2 to the Jets. So the draft starts at 3. And then they make the trade, and it's clearly going to be a quarterback. So now the draft really starts at 4. You know what I mean? And it's just a matter of who you believe in and how much that's going to change. Listen, I think that's a possibility, although, you know, Matt Ryan's still playing at a pretty high level. But every new coach and every general manager wants their guy. I mean, one of the reasons Sam Darnold is no longer a Jet is because the general manager and the coach that drafted him aren't there anymore. And everybody wants their dude. Everyone wants their guy. And so it would not surprise me in any way, shape, or form. But it also puts the Falcons in the primo spot. Like, if there's a quarterback you want, come talk to us, because we got all kinds of options.
If you were going to be hosting this draft this year, Trey Wingo with us, if you were going to be hosting the draft this year, like on a normal year, where would you kind of look at, okay, you know Trevor Lawrence is going number one. You know that's going to happen. You know that pick's going to be in. You know you're going to have the analysis, and you're going to end up interviewing, you know, probably Trevor right then and there, you know, and then you move on to the next. Yeah. You know it's going to be Zach Wilson. When would the night you would anticipate that it would get interesting for this draft? Is it Ford Atlanta, or is it a little deeper in the night?
Well, listen, it got really interesting in 2017 when they drafted up to take Patrick Mahomes at 10, Kansas City did. And it got super interesting at 12 when the Texans moved up for Deshaun Watson. But remember, that year, Mitchell Trubisky, they moved up one spot to take Mitchell Trubisky overall, second overall behind Myles Garrett. But you're right. I think that this year the spot at four sounds and looks like that's where it's really going to get interesting. The other part of that you mentioned, which is also certainly a possibility, is that I'm not sure that Carolina is done. You know, Darnold is on a team that I think is going to be better for him, but that, I don't think that precludes Carolina from doing something if they felt like there was a guy that they really, really enjoyed out there. And they are what? I think they're eighth, right? So, I mean, it's the draft really starts at four. I mean, that's where we are now, because there's four, five, and six. If you have your quarterback, four, five, and six is a sweet spot in this draft. Do you go for a wide receiver like Jamar Chase? Do you go for Kyle Pitts, who is an absolute freak show and is doing things in a tight end body that only wide receivers have done before? Or do you take the thing to lock down your quarterback, a guy like Penei Sewell, the offensive tackle out of Oregon? If you have your quarterback, this is a much more fun draft. And in an upcoming interview or podcast with Chargers GM Tom Telesco on Half Forgotten History, which you can find on Trey Wingo Presents. Thank you very much. He talks about the difference between drafting when you need a quarterback and drafting when you don't need a quarterback, and how different the entire experience is.
Trey Wingo's our guest. Titans are going to be picking 22nd. They add Bud Dupree. They add DeNico Autry. So now they've got at least, you know, a decent front four with Jeffrey Simmons and Harold Landry, but certainly probably not, you know, not great, not what you think maybe. Do you think that if they hit a home run this year with the 22nd pick, that they could work their way from a team that I think we'd all agree is outside the Super Bowl bubble, maybe work their way into it? Or is there still a lot more that needs to be done with that roster?
Well, it's interesting, right? Because this was essentially very similar to the roster that played great defense a year ago. And a year later, that same core didn't quite play as well. So then you have the question, okay, was it the players? Was it the coaching? Was it little things that we can fix, or do we need a massive overhaul? Because when you're dead last in sacks in a league where the four most important positions in football are quarterback, protect the quarterback, catch the ball from a quarterback, and tackle the quarterback, you got a problem. And you've got to figure out what the definition of that problem is, and what's not the symptom, what's the cause. That's the most important thing for them to do. And I want to say this real quickly, because everyone does it, and we're all guilty of it. They could totally whiff at 22 and still have an amazing draft. We all get so infatuated with first-round picks, and they're a 50% hit rate at best. I mean, they really are. What you want to do is find three or four starters in every draft. That's what you want to do. And if you look at the teams that draft really well, it's never as much the first-round picks that make the team better. It's the second, third, fourth, fifth round guys that suddenly are a lot better than anybody anticipated. So we're all guilty of it. Every one of us that's ever been a draft. Oh, it's about the first round and the first night. Your team is built in rounds second through seven and undrafted free agents by a large, large margin. So the idea, the scope of how we should look at a draft, I think, needs to be dramatically altered to understand. We get it. Sex sells, right? The shiny object. But is it the sizzle or the steak? And I think so often we settle for the sizzle when the steak is the real thing we should be focusing on.
Well, to that point, Trey, one thing I totally think about with the Titans is they have four picks in the top 100. And I said I'd rather have four good players this year, you know, guys that are, you know, three-year starters or two-year starters, play out their full 4 years, 5 years for the first-round pick, but 4 years play it out like Jonnu Smith did, like Corey Davis did. You know, they're not special, but they play it out, and then they go somewhere else. I'd rather have four good players than one superstar this year in the first round.
You're 100% right. Look, unless that superstar is Patrick Mahomes, you know, or someone along those lines, you are correct. But just look at the Super Bowl. What was the difference in that Super Bowl? It was the depth of the defensive front seven of the Bucks and the lack of depth on the offensive line for Kansas City. I mean, there's your ball game right there. What did they think? The Patrick Mahomes ran like 100-something plus yards around the field trying to avoid sacks in that game. For any other quarterback, they would have been on the ground 15 times. It was an absolute obliteration because there was a complete lack of depth by injury as much as anything else. I mean, they didn't have either one of their starting tackles from week one, which had never happened before in Super Bowl history. And then, of course, Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, one of their great guards, opted out this year because he's literally a doctor, and he thought it was more important to serve his native Canadians during the pandemic. So, you know, the lack of depth at a very important position and the overwhelming depth at another very important position was the difference in the game. So you are 100% right. Give me four good to really good over one superstar unless that guy is a unicorn like Patrick Mahomes.
Trey Wingo is our guest. One thing that just absolutely irked me today, Trey, and I guess I'm taking it out on you because I got a lot of Preds trade deadline stuff today, but it irked me, and it is I saw a report. Josina Anderson reported that the Browns are working on getting a meeting with Jadeveon Clowney, and then I hear people on television say, oh, my God, Clowney, if you sign Clowney, he's going to take your – look. The Titans signed Clowney last year. He got zero sacks. And I know sacks can be overrated sometimes, but not when your position is to go sack. And I don't understand how one guy, you know, in baseball, we see prospects, they come up, they get called up, and if they don't hit, nobody ever sits there and talks about how great this baseball player is going to be. And yet Clowney seems to be the one guy who everybody thinks he's Myles Garrett, and he literally will not go sack the quarterback. And I don't know where people get this from. And I don't know where this idea that he's going to come in and save Cleveland, I don't know where that's coming from.
Well, the good news is if he goes to Cleveland, he doesn't have to save Cleveland because you just said
that's true.
They have Myles Garrett. So, like, he doesn't need to save Cleveland. He needs to be a complimentary, you know, like, he needs to be a good number two. Like, wide receivers are a really prime example of that. I've seen a lot of really, really good wide receivers that had a real star opposite them. Then the star leaves. That ain't the same guy. Look at Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster and the number of 100-yard games when Juju was on the other side of Antonio Brown, and look how many he had when he wasn't on the other side of Antonio Brown. And there weren't many. I think it's 7-2. But you're right. Clowney's an athletic freak show, right? If you could check the boxes, give me this agility, this height, this speed, all that, boom, he'd have everything. But, you know, you don't play that game on a piece of paper where you check boxes. You got to go out and actually do it. And Clowney has been good, but he has not been the player that would justify the overall consensus of a number one pick in a draft, which he was in 2014.
Trey Wingo, our guest. Trey, appreciate it. Again, Trey Wingo Presents, his new podcast, is on YouTube. You can subscribe today. 10,000 subscribers, and I'm literally going through it right now, Trey. Not that I think any of us are surprised by this, but, I mean, it is A-lister after A-lister after A-lister after A-lister after A-lister that is sitting down with Trey Wingo on Trey Wingo Presents. And the latest one with Archie and Eli Manning is part of the half-forgotten history. So, again, go hit that subscribe button on Trey Wingo's YouTube because, I mean, Trey, we saw you do great work for two decades, three decades, and I'm sure it's continuing.
I appreciate that, Jared. It's a lot of fun. Thank you.
Yep, Trey Wingo, he's one of the best. Appreciate you, Trey.
Okay, buddy, be good.
Yep, Trey Wingo, a long time, long time. I mean, you talk about the draft. I will say this, and Caroline, maybe you can back me up on this or not. I mean, you know, we are an ESPN affiliate. You did just come from ESPN. I think I'm going to miss Trey Wingo. I'm going to miss him. I'm going to miss him not being on the draft, and that's not a knock on Greeny, but I'm going to miss him not being on the draft this year.
Oh, absolutely, and fun story about Trey Wingo. So I think it was my first or second week as an intern at ESPN. So I am just like the teeniest, tiniest little fish in this massive pond.
But you're still in college at this point.
I just graduated college.
Okay, so you just graduated
college. I just graduated from college. I sent Trey Wingo an email. I said, hey, can you give me a little bit of time one day? Grab coffee. I just want to talk to you. I want to meet you. And he did. And he probably did not need to do that. He probably had way more important things he needed to do, but he took the time to talk to me, gave me great advice. And we still chat via text sometimes. So yeah, great guy. And I will miss him dearly this draft class.
I'll say this about Trey. Everybody that I've known that's been around him, and I don't know Trey that well. I mean, Trey and I know each other well enough, but I mean, you know, Floyd did NFL Live with him for years and just talked about how knowledgeable and how professional and how great of a guy he is. So I was glad to have Trey on the show. That's our draft outlook, by the way, brought to you by Farm Bureau Health Plans and by Apple Collision Centers. Coming up next, we'll hit the headlines with Caroline and then David Poile at 4:30 on the inactions of today. We're live from the Old Selling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Stillman and Company. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're delivered by TriStar Moving. We're streaming on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, Periscope. I think that's it. And the Game Nashville app. Stillman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5 The Game. David Poile. In 10 minutes, we will have David Poile again. The Predators made kind of a move. They traded a seventh-round pick and a prospect, and easy on the word prospect, a young player I've never heard of, and a seventh-round pick in exchange for a big defenseman who's maybe a third-pair guy. So that's the move, David Poile, in 9 minutes, and no Granlin, no Holla, no Cousins. They all stay. So we'll hear about that from David. But it is time now for the headlines from Caroline.
We're spanning the sports world. It's Headlines with Caroline on Stillman and Company, right here on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
When I was planning my headlines for today, this was the very first thing I wrote down because I couldn't wait to get your reaction. Jadeveon Clowney in talks with a deal with the Browns.
I'm not
Give
one.
It to me.
I've never been an executive, and I'm not sure that I'd be a very good program director on the radio. I'm not sure I'd be a very good, you know, director of programming on television. I'm not sure I'd be very good at that. I watched ESPN this morning, and they talked about if Clowney went to the Browns, would that make them Super Bowl contenders? And I would have literally fired everybody on the panel if I had run that show. Marcus Spears, who I love, would be fired. Because he was like, he said, that, I mean, come on, he sucks. He sucks. And today, I got freaking Gentry Estes from the Tennessean sitting there being like, you know, Clowney doesn't suck. It's like someone when you're like, oh, don't you hate so-and-so? Well, I don't hate anybody. Dude, he sucks. He sucks. He is literally, and it gets me fired up every time when people are like, no, he makes a lot of plays in the run game. He just doesn't get a lot of sales. He just doesn't with the, no, he doesn't do any of it. He doesn't do anything. The defense was awful when he was there. They were awful when he wasn't there. There was no difference. Why? Because if we were to put Khalil Mack on one side and the practice squad on the other, he's a whole heck of a lot closer to the practice squad than he is to Khalil Mack. I mean, he sucks. And I hope Cleveland signs him for two reasons. One, because then I will downgrade Cleveland in my mind for next year. And two, because then I will know that there is no possible way that Mike Vrabel can convince anybody to go sign him again. So I hope he signs. I hope he signs with Cleveland. I hope he signs with Indianapolis. I hope he signs with Baltimore. Just please, just take him. Take him. God, he stinks.
I just can't wait for the day that, let's say if Jadeveon Clowney does go to the Colts, if he sacks Ryan Tannehill, I can't wait to watch you eat your words. But I do have to say, he is not South Carolina Jadeveon Clowney, and we need to get over that narrative. He will not be 2012 Jadeveon Clowney ever again. We just need to get past that. Some more moves in the NFL. Julian Edelman's contract has been terminated by the Patriots. Not really sure the specifics on that. We're thinking that that's more of a retirement kind of deal, and that was just part of his retirement. But are we thinking that the Patriots are going to target a wide receiver in the draft now?
Well, I think the Patriots are certainly, you know, they've got Nelson Aguilar, they've got Kendrick Bourne, who I don't know anything about. I would say this for Edelman. This is the difference between when you play quarterback and when you don't play quarterback. The TB12 method does not work when you don't play quarterback because you get hit all the time. And Edelman's had a great career, but he just can't stay healthy. I do wonder, though, if he will get like a proven opportunity with Tampa Bay And he, if he was healthy and capacity physical, he wouldn't be a bad fit with the Titans on a veteran minimum deal to replace the Adam Humphries role. What's next?
Would be very interesting to see him in Tampa Bay. And speaking of another team that's trying to possibly maybe build another super team, the Bengals signed former Washington tight end Thaddeus Moss, who was also Joe Burrow's former tight end at LSU. So are the Bengals going to target Ja'Marr Chase and just basically rebuild an LSU 2019 2.0?
The Bengals being a college team, I think, is very on brand. I feel like we've seen that for the last 20 years.
Not what I was going for there, but fair.
Being a good college team, I think the Bengals have been. You know, I mean, like, look, the Bengals have got to take. To me, they've got to go. I mean, I would build the nastiest offensive and defensive lines I could, and I'd worry about receiver and everything else later. I would. You know, I'd want Burrow to be comfortable, but I'd worry about it all later. And that's, you know, but we'll see. I mean, I always liked Randy Moss's kid. I thought he was a good tight end at LSU. And then
yeah,
when he didn't get drafted, or I thought that was insane. I have always liked that kid. So I think Burrow's got potential with Cincinnati. I'm not so much worried about Burrow as much as I am worried about Cincinnati. Caroline's headlines. I'm sorry we had to cut it short there, but David Poyle is coming up next. We will hear what he had to say right here. Stillman and company get the trade deadline. The Preds don't do much. Granlund still here, Hollis still here, Cousins still here, Poyle next. Five weeks ago, we thought today, trade deadline day, was going to be a big one. We thought it was going to be big. Then it wasn't. Then the Predators started winning some games. Things got exciting, and I said, hey, if they don't sell, I said on Friday, if they don't sell, I'm against it. But I understand it. Today, that's exactly what they did. A very, very minor move for a possible third pair defenseman. But the question's David Poyle, who's about ready to meet with the local media, which we will carry live in its entirety, and will stream the press conference as well on Periscope, Twitter, YouTube, just everywhere that you watch Stillman & Company, you can see the David Poyle press conference, which is starting right now.
Manager David Poyle. David will begin by making some opening remarks, and then we'll get to your questions. So with that, David, go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Good afternoon. First thing, I'd like to just talk a little bit about our season. It's obviously been a very difficult season, very difficult start back in January and February, where we played 9 of our first 13 games against what turns out to be the top three teams in our division, Tampa Bay, Florida, and in Carolina, and we didn't do so well in those games. We went 1-8 in those games, and after 13 games of the season, our penalty killing was at a historical low, something like 62%. Our power play was under 15% in the bottom third of the NHL, and our save percentage was 893, including UC Saros, who was 881 in the first 8 games that he played in. And things didn't get much better for a while. We had some canceled games due to that bad storm in Dallas. And then we started to get some injuries, first to Luke Kunin, then to Ryan Ellis. And when we came home to hope to get things going in the right direction, we lost 3 games in a row to Carolina and Florida by a combined score of 16-8. And then we suffered some more injuries. UC Saros got hurt, Brad Richardson, Mark Borowiecki, Matt Duchene. And that was when we headed out to our longest road trip in the history of our franchise, a 15-day road trip, 8-game road trip, and playing teams like Dallas, Carolina, Tampa Bay, and Florida, who at that point had beaten us 11 of 12 games combined. But strange thing happened on that road trip. That turned out to be the turning point in our season. We played real well in the first 5 games and were 2-2-1. And then on March 18th, UC Saros returned from the IR and made an immediate impact with our team. He's 41 saves in a 2-1 win in Florida. And he's been on a hot streak. I think he's 8-2, maybe 9-2, I think, 965 save percentage, 1.19 goals against average. And obviously a big reason why in the month of in the last month or so, we've gone on a record of 11 wins and 3 losses and have found ourselves in a playoff spot in the Central Division. So all the things that were wrong at the beginning of the season are now turning in our favor. Our goaltending is terrific. Our special teams have really improved. Our power play is a big reason why our season got turned around. A young player by the name of Eli Tolvanen has been a big contributor there. Our penalty killing, which was the worst in the league, has improved by 10 percentage points, and actually has been second in the league since March 18th. So it's been an incredible year. It's been an incredible lot of things that have happened. The number of injuries we've had, 34 different players playing for the Predators this year, 11 or 12 rookies have played in our team. But it's been great as of late. The young players have really stepped up, brought some great energy to our team. I think a lot of credit needs to go out to our development people in Milwaukee and our development coaches and how the great work that they've done with our young players. Also, our coaching staff led by John Hines has installed a winning system that can be played regardless of the names on the jersey. And he's gotten the players to have a full buy-in here for where we head into this critical stretch. So our goaltending is really good. As I said, we found out a lot about our younger players on defense. Carrier has played really well. Jeremy Davies is now playing as a regular. Ben Harper's playing as a regular. We've signed David Ferentz. He's got to play in one game. On the forwards, young players like Eli Tolvanen has led the way on the power play for us. Luke Cunningham, who we traded for in the offseason but unfortunately got hurt, has come back and now playing like the player that we expected when we traded for him. We've established an identity line with Trennan, Sissons, and Olivier. And got a couple other young players like Rem Pitlick that's starting to show that he belongs in the NHL. And Tanner Janot played his second game of the season last night against Dallas and really played well. So all in all, really happy with what's taken place and what I would call the most unusual and possibly most confusing season that I've been in as a general manager. So the trading deadline is passed. We're very happy that we made one acquisition, and that was getting defenseman Eric Branson from the Ottawa Senators for a seventh round draft pick in 2023. Eric is a veteran player. He's a big physical defenseman. I think that falls into the theme of and the identity that we want our team to play. As you know, we've been very banged up all over in our lineup, but especially on defense. And I think Eric certainly gives us some good depth as we head into the last 13 games of the regular season. He will get to Nashville as soon as he clears quarantine and immigration. So hopefully that won't be too long, but it certainly won't be tomorrow. It'll be probably later in the week. So that's where we are. And now I'm open for any questions.
All right. Thank you very much, David. We'll get things started. Go to Brooks Bratton first. Go ahead, Brooks.
Hi, David. Good afternoon. Certainly no two trade deadlines are alike. I know you touched on the move to acquire Gudbranson. Why just the one acquisition here today? And how did you see the day play out overall from your vantage point?
Well, we have 34 players in Nashville right now, which is just an unreal number of players. We have 9 players today that I believe are on IR. We're getting closer with a couple of players, but we needed some more depth on defense, and that was an obvious thing to do in terms to strengthen our defense. I'm just got my fingers crossed that we can stay without getting too many more injuries and getting some players back maybe as soon as next week, and start building from there. So with the way the team is playing, with all of the young players playing, more prominent roles, I really like where we're going, where we're headed. And I didn't think there was any need to make any more changes.
Adam Vingan.
Good afternoon, David. How drastically did your approach to the trade deadline shift from a month ago when the team was 10 points out of a playoff spot to today when you are in control of your own destiny for that fourth spot in the Central Division?
Well, I think the trade deadline was certainly different for us than maybe most teams because our record was so poor and it appeared that we were out of it. There was probably more talk by me and other teams engaging in talk with us earlier than normal. I would say a normal trading deadline is in the last week for almost every club. So I guess you could say I had the luxury of, you know, talking to a lot more teams and just finding out different values of our team. I think it's always good to talk about your players, other players, just to see what their value is. And again, it certainly, it changed game by game. I just felt all along that we were a better team than we had displayed at the beginning of the season. There were so many factors that went into why we didn't play well. Some that we wish we could have changed, but didn't. The good news is that a lot of these things are coming together. I know we have a long way to go in terms of, to just making the playoffs, but I feel we've been in the playoffs for the last several games. And I think these last 13 games is the playoffs right now for our team. And again, for a lot of these young players that we've brought in that are making such a good contribution to our hockey club. So, it's good. I'm glad we were a buyer today versus a seller. I think that's always a good sign for your franchise in terms of your belief. I think that clearly shows that you believe in the players. I think it's a reward for the players, the coaches, the fans, that you didn't trade anybody away and that you actually added to your team. And, it's been really good and exciting the last 3 weeks, and let's hope it continues that way.
Teresa Walker.
Good afternoon, David. How has the salary cap crunch kind of affected movement, and how tough was it easier to be a buyer than a seller today?
Yeah, the salary cap is really interesting with it being flat, not only this year, but going forward. There wasn't too many deals made in this last two or three days that had players that had more than this year's contract left. And that's, you know, speaks to the salary cap not going up. You also saw what I would believe is the most salary retention in trades that's ever happened before. And one of those unexpected consequences when you put together the CBA in terms of how money is being used. So you saw a lot of teams that had cap space use that to acquire draft picks, if you will. And it was just a little bit different, but I think these next couple of years, because of the flat cap, is going to really test everybody in terms of the contracts they give out and what free agents sign for, length of contracts that you give. And I think you just sort of saw the tip of the iceberg with what took place here with the trading at the trading deadline.
Joe Rexroad.
David, were you still open to the possibility of being a seller as late as today, you know, just based on a possible offer you'd have gotten? And if not, at what point were you not open to that anymore?
In my heart, I was I was not open to it because of how I believed in this team and wanted to give them a chance. But as a manager, I was taking calls, and I was listening, because I think that's free, and why wouldn't I? But I had pretty well made up my mind a little while ago, based on how things were going, that it would have to be something that would be really different than anything that I had heard of or had been brought up to me that would make me want to change where we are right now.
John Glennon.
Hey, David. I know, as you obviously pointed out there, things have certainly gone very well for the team in the last several weeks, but I'll ask the devil's advocate question here. The Preds are still 3-13-1 against the three teams above them in the division, and obviously you'd have to beat, you know, one or two of them in the playoffs to go on a run. Is there any argument that could be made that, as well as things gone in the last few weeks, that it would be better for the future to move some of the veterans today?
John, I think that's a fair question, and I think that's reality, that we haven't done well against the top three teams. And if we do make the playoffs, those are one of the three teams that we're going to face in the playoffs. So hope springs eternal, and it starts tomorrow night, where we get another chance against Tampa Bay. I was really happy with how we played against them the other night. They're the Stanley Cup champs, but I think thought we held our own, but we didn't beat them. My exact answer to that is I think that maybe the playoffs don't start for, you know, a month, but I think we're basically in the playoffs right now. because we're in the playoffs to make the playoffs, if you will. We have to win games on a regular basis just to get there. And I think the experience that we get, especially with our younger players and the chemistry that we have on our club, our coaching staff, it just all makes more sense to me for what to keep the team together versus what I could have gotten, you know, a couple of draft choices or what have you. I'm not trying to play that down, but that's my answer. Is I just think that what we have going right now, what we can learn, what players, how they develop, and let's get our first goal here is let's just get to the playoffs, and then let's see what happens.
Chris Harris.
Yeah, David, I was going to ask more or less the same question, but to piggyback off that and take it a step further, what do you believe that the ceiling is for this particular team that you've left intact now?
I still think we have a long way to go. You know, as I've often said, the managers try not to think on a game by game or a daily basis. Our job is more of having a vision of the next 3 to 5 years. You know, there's going to be time to talk more about this, but, you know, I think at each position, there's things that we would want to do to change or improve our team. But, you know, having said that, if you go back to last year at when the season ended and it was over, I kind of teased a little bit of a youth movement with our organization, and it didn't really happen. It didn't happen for a variety of reasons, but I would say that, you know, again, you talk about trading deadline, you talk about youth movement. We probably made as many changes as any club in the National Hockey League has in the last month or so. And all of it has been integrating the young players into our organization. So, you know, I've said those before, like Carrier, Davies, now Ference gets a chance. Harper's been playing regular all season on the forwards, Tolvin, and Trennan wasn't playing regular. Now he is. Olivier's getting his first crack up here. He's playing regular. Pidlick's starting to get in the lineup. And, you know, Janot was the latest guy. Cannon was a trade in the offseason. So I really am happy with where we've gone, say, from a year ago with our team to where we are today.
Robbie Stanley.
Yeah, David, obviously Granlund has been incredibly important to your group this year with the different roles that he's played, and is on an expiring contract, and you guys have decided to hold on to him. Is a contract beyond this season something that you would like to consider with Granlund as you move forward here?
Well, it's not the right time or place, and I have not talked to Granny nor his agent, but he's been a terrific player for us, and if he's interested, we're interested. He's certainly played really, really well. There's a lot of things in the offseason, starting with expansion, that we all have to deal with. Once again, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent. But I would have to say that where we stand in terms of our relationship, his performance with our team, our happiness with him, his happiness with us, without exactly asking him, I would say it's probably at all-time high. So I would certainly love to engage in a conversation with Mikael and his agent after the year to see if that's a possibility.
Gentry Estes.
Yeah, hey, David, you talked about this a little bit with some of the younger players, but, you know, looking back to a year ago on the trade deadline, fairly similar situation, moves on that day. And I'm curious if you're more confident in the core of this team now than you were then. And why do you think the success has happened recently during a stretch where you've had so many key players out injured?
I agree with you. It's similar, but there's something different about it. I'll try to articulate it. It probably goes back to our most successful time, and that was in 17 when we went to the Stanley Cup Finals, and I think we fought hard the next 2 years, but we lost in the playoffs in the first round, and you know, different things were happening to our club, and coaching change and COVID, and it really probably reached the rock bottom, if you will, with what took place in the first part of this season. Just a lot of players that didn't play well, a lot of things went wrong, and I just think our new coaches, starting with John Hines, has really established himself with our team and how we want to play. And again, it's got a real good buy-in for everybody. You can see the excitement with how our players play. I mean, after the game and when we win a game, how much fun they seem to be having with each other. It's just been a wake-up call. I was really glad to see Ryan Ellis return to our lineup, and especially pleased with his comments to say that when he left and when he came back, it's a totally different team. And that's exactly what we wanted to have happen. A lot of players have just renewed energy and a better performance in their game, and a lot of new players on our team that weren't here last year at this time that are playing significant roles and look like players that could be playing significant roles for us in the coming years. So a lot more optimism today than say there was last year at this time.
Justin Bradford.
Hi, David. So last offseason in October, weird to say that, but last offseason it was spoke about the youth movement potentially coming in. And then obviously with the season coming in as condensed, that changed the strategy going in, and obviously hindsight being 2020, but the youth movement was kind of thrust upon this organization due to injuries and everything. Is there anything about that of kind of reevaluating what it could have been like and going back and putting more youth in at the beginning? And how does it give confidence just into the future and what the offseason could look like and giving these guys even more playing time in the next year that's more guaranteed?
Well, I'm not a big one of going back too much about what we didn't do. I don't say don't do that, but I think it's really important that we got it right. And I think we've got it right in terms of all of the younger players that we're using. And we did that within our organization. We didn't, there are some trades, some acquisitions, like, you know, Cunningham Davies comes from the Subban trade, but it might've been a little bit longer than it should have been. Maybe it was exactly the right time. It matters, but it doesn't matter. The good news is that we've got these kids playing here now. We feel good about where we're headed. They're, if you were having this conversation, you know, a couple of months ago, and you'd asked me what 21-22 looks like, I probably would have a little bit different answer for you. And there'd be a lot more holes that I think we would have had to fill at that point. Where now I see a lot of upside with a lot of different players. And I'm really excited about the rest of this year. And obviously I'm excited about the future.
Alex Daugherty.
Hey, David, sort of related to the other questions about the sort of change in mindset over the last month, just in terms of how that kind of went down. Would you say it was more you not making phone calls related to trades, or are there just fewer calls coming in about your players due to your team playing better? Kind of which one was it?
Well, I think it's always a combination. I mean, again, we got off to such a poor start, and there was so much written about the Preds and what we're going to do and, you know, and this and that. And whether I was making calls or people were calling me, there was a lot. And then, as I said, we started winning and was less need for people to call me and less need for me to want to call other people. Like I said, I'm just trying to do my job. And I've talked to all, you know, 31 teams several times. I mean, I would do that if we were in first place or last place, and just because you're exchanging information all the time. But the need or the desire to make changes became less and less each game that we played, and the integration of a new or a younger player and their performance and how we played almost regardless of the result just changed a lot in terms of what we thought in the organization as to what the possible, you know, changes or direction that we should go.
Brian Bashan.
Good afternoon, David. A very busy offseason is quickly approaching with both the Seattle expansion draft and the organization having 25 players that are pending free agents. Were today's moves or lack thereof made as part of a plan for next season's preparations? And are you worried about not moving some of those assets for return today when they may depart with no compensation as a result?
That's always the hardest, you know, situation. I mean, when you're the team that's, you know, vying for the playoffs and you say you're not in first place or what have you, whether you should, you know, trade some of your unrestricted guys to get assets in the future. And I think I partially at least answered that question before, but I felt that the we said so many young players now that these veteran players, whether they come back or not, were being such a good compliment influence on these younger guys that it didn't make any sense to do that. Like the Granlund question was asked before, and I would be happy to re-sign Michael Granlund if that makes sense for him and for us. He's been terrific for us this year. So, you know, if we were in a different place further down in the standings or what have you, maybe that's what might have happened. But our improved play, our team chemistry, all the youth coming into our hockey team, what we can get out of the rest of this year and hopefully make the playoffs, I certainly didn't think trading any of those guys was worthwhile. And it really seems like we need some depth. I mean, we're carrying 34 players on our roster right now with 9 on the IR. I don't know why I'm knocking on wood, because that hasn't seemed to help all year in terms of the injuries. So, you know, I'd love to get some of these guys back. I mean, we're playing without Philip Forsberg, Tolvin, and that's 2/3 of our first line. I mean, we're playing without, you know, Duchesne. We're playing without Fabro, is at the top, one of our top four defensemen. So I think there's still a lot more that our team could grow. So I'm hoping for good health, and I like it when, you know, you're playing poker. I like to be all in. That's a much better position than just sitting on the sidelines. So I like where we are.
Adam Bingen.
David, near the beginning, you spoke about how last month you were getting a sense of the values of your players. Based on those conversations, what was the value you ascertained for Matthias Ekholm, and how does keeping him past the deadline complicate your potential expansion draft decision?
Well, it to me, I don't want to go into, you know, too many details. Like, in terms of expansion, I think we have that covered. I mean, I'm not losing Matthias Ekholm in expansion, if that's what you're asking me. I've got that covered. I mean, again, Matthias has been a good player for us. And again, his name got thrown out there a lot in trade baits and different things. But I mean, my next conversation with Matthias will be after this year about how he thinks he fits into the future of this hockey club and whether he would like to be here longer, not whether we want to trade him.
We'll go to Emily Proud.
Yeah, you mentioned that, you know, even when things weren't going great at the beginning of the season, you still kind of believed in this group and you still had faith in them. I'm curious, what was it about this group in particular, even now with all the injuries and the group looks different, but what was it about this team that you kept the faith even when things weren't going great?
Well, you're always looking for that turning point or something. I'm going to have to come up with later with a really good answer for you on that. I think it was so many things, honestly, just so many different things. This COVID thing has been very difficult on everybody, you guys, our families, etc. We have to get tested every day. We're in a bubble in terms of our life or what we can do. I mean, our life is pretty good. Don't get me wrong. I have no complaints, but I don't believe you've seen me out in a restaurant or at Kroger since the day after Christmas, because I haven't been there because that's what we have to do. We're supposed to do to stay in the bubble. So there's COVID. There's I don't know. It's all the changes that we made. It's making a significant change from coming off of the Stanley Cup team of 17 and, you know, getting away from that and now building up the next great team here with the Predators. There's some players that just didn't play well. There's maybe some decisions that we didn't make correctly that other players should have made our team or been given a chance earlier. There's some line combinations or defense combinations that maybe should have been tried differently. If you remember, the training camp was not very, very good to start with. It was, I think, 10 days in length, but we had all sorts of COVID at the beginning of it. So our training camp was 6 days long instead of 10. We make a trade for Eric Hall. His wife has a baby in Minnesota. He doesn't even get here for training camp. So we just had so many different things. I don't think it was one thing, but slowly but surely, doing a puzzle, we found the pieces and we started to put them in the right place, and the puzzle started to get completed, and it's nowhere near completed. I don't think we got a lot of room to grow, and we'll work on that. But I can really see the outline of what the puzzle looks like, and it looks like a team to me right now. That's what the puzzle looks like. It looks like the Nashville Predators are a really good, close-knit team.
We'll take two more here.
That was David Poile. Wow. Okay. Lot to unpack from the David Poile press conference. And I've got a take I want to get to. We'll do that coming up next. We'll get your reaction. David Poile. I mean, David thinks this team's better than I think this team is. I think we can all agree. But we got to take a we'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. Text in your reaction to this as well. Stillman and Company. We're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app.